Well, I mean, it all works together, but the reality is this is independently standing. You could come to this on its own. This would be more. This would be almost predominantly about email communication, email marketing. Okay. You do email now, right?
Yeah.
And you know the very best day to send to get opens, or the best time of day?
No.
Or how many characters in the subject line? That impacts open rate in a huge way. Impacts click-throughs phenomenally. And it's just not the sort of thing you come across every day. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And it's going to be a blast. You're going to walk out stunned and amazed. It's really awe and, yeah, I forgot what it's called. But,
you walk out right here.
2 minutes. Stunned at least, yeah. Yes. So I had some thoughts last night, of course, because I thought about this a bunch. And one is, how soon do you have to jump into Facebook? So here's what I would do in your case. You've got your email list. You can actually have Facebook check that to see who of those email addresses are on Facebook. If it's 5%, maybe it's not time yet. If it's a third or more, absolutely. If your email followers do have no presence on Facebook at this point, put it back burner for 6 months. You've got other things to do.
How do you find that?
Facebook can check email accounts?
Yeah, so Facebook can actually update your contact list, and it'll check and find everybody who's on Facebook. That doesn't automatically send them a message. It'll just tell you, these people are on Facebook. You could then send them an invitation to friend you, but you don't have to do that. I would do it just to see how many are involved.
Do they keep that list, or does it?
No.
So
they don't do anything with email addresses, so no worries.
Do you say over 30%?
30% or higher would be a no-brainer. 5% would be a no-brainer the other way. It's not ready yet. In between those, it depends on you. I mean, probably at around 25% would be my break-even point. You know, less than 25%, wait a few months. 25% or higher, boom, go. And you might find it's 80%, and then what are you going to do? You're going to realize you should have done a business page 2 months ago.
You submit a list of your email.
Yeah, you just upload your. It could be like a CSV file or Excel file. It could be an Outlook, and it can read the Outlook file. So it says, if you want us to search your address book, you say yes, then you find where that is on your computer, and it searches it for you.
Does that compromise our own responsibility to keep those lists private?
Well, it doesn't stay uploaded to them. They're just checking it. So there's not a privacy concern.
So we take that list, and somebody, either we or me, sends it over to Facebook. Facebook says X percent or whatever.
Right. Well, you'll see how many. And you do the percentage yourself.
We're on Facebook.
One more time.
We're on Facebook. Yes.
Oh, we're on Facebook. It's on Add Contacts or Search for Friends. It'll allow you to search for people from your high school, people from your college, people who are from the same workplace, and everybody in your address book. Okay, I have that it's a quarter after. Ready to go?
Yep.
Start on time, end on time. So who hasn't been here at all in the last 2 days? We have some new faces. Good to know you. So I will briefly reintroduce myself. My name is Ron Cates, and I work for Constant Contact. They're the world's largest supplier of digital marketing tools to small businesses and nonprofits. And I actually function as their digital marketing expert, particularly their email marketing expert. And I go around the country and I speak at big conferences, big events, on how to do this really well. Now, I knew this wasn't going to be big. Usually my minimum point is 1,000. But when I talked to Rabbi Goodman and he told me about this, I couldn't wait to do it. So here's where I want to start. This is day three, and seriously, I couldn't be more serious. Thank you so much for letting me come to this. It's been fascinating. I've met some amazing people. Many of you, I count as friends now, so this has been fabulous. I've been doing email marketing for almost 20 years, since email began. I had just quit my corporate job to try to turn my hobby into a small business, and I started doing email marketing, even though I didn't know that's what it was. I was doing an email newsletter because I saw the big companies were doing that, and I wanted my company to look big, even though it was still on my kitchen table. And it grew, very fast, my business and my email list. 11 years ago, Constant Contact was created, and I signed up on their first day, so I'm their oldest user, or longest time user, I suppose. And they helped me grow my business to a $6 million a year business. I sold that a long time ago, spent 5 years helping nonprofits. And for the last five, Constant Contact called me up asking if I would do this. I said yes, and it's been the most fun thing ever. So I'm going to have a blast. And if you have half as much fun as I do, you'll have fun too. And if you don't, I don't care, because I'll have fun anyway. So here is a bold promise. This will be the most exciting, entertaining, educational, and informative email marketing seminar you've ever gone to. How many of you have gone to one before? So usually there's a few that have come to one of mine. So how many have come to one of mine? A few hands go up and I'm like, stop or swipe some, please. As a side note, and I don't know if you mentioned this, in San Diego there's a couple that have come to all 63 consecutive events that I've done there. I don't know what to say. If you were here yesterday, a couple thoughts. One was, do I get involved in Facebook yet? Well, let Facebook look at your contact and see how many are on Facebook. If it's 25% or more, I'd say jump in right away. I also attempted to mention a tool for Outlook that will help you manage your email. There are lots of them. There's one I like in particular. It's called Clear Context. And they have a free Clear Context, and they have a free 30-day trial. It will really help you organize your inbox and prioritize things. So I think it's worth playing around with. If you hate it, you just delete it. It didn't cost you anything. If you love it, you'll have to buy it. But worth playing with. It'll give you some great ideas that maybe you can end up managing on your own with the same system. Hi, come on in. We're just starting because we're not going to start without Andy. All right. We're going to move this whole session to Philadelphia so we can do it there live, right? All right, off we go. Here's what we're going to cover. Email marketing 101, what is it and why does it work? I'm not going to bore you with the history of email. You know, here's when spam began. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. I am going to tell you this too. I have a non-profit version of this presentation, and I purposely chose the small business one because you are not afraid of the word marketing. Right? I've met you over the last few days. I know that this is unique and different. So this will have a lot of small business terms like customers and selling and sales. So yes, I could use the nonprofit one that changes that language to stakeholders and communication, but I thought that'd be condescending to you. So I think we're talking the same language. Strategy and techniques right away. I'll be going down best practices almost immediately. Your hand will get tired taking notes. There'll be so many. I will send this to you. Somehow I need to send you these presentations. Now, if you give me a business card, I'll make sure that happens. But so many people came and we didn't do that. I don't know if there's a way to get the entire list of attendees, or you could really send spam, addresses. I promise.
Just email addresses.
Either a business card or I have blanks. Because we have these scanned, so it would be better if it's on one of these instead of a piece of paper. If you don't have a business card with your phone number or email address, if you would use one of these, that'd be fantastic. I'm going to put you in charge, Jonathan.
Yes.
Of distributing this. If I get your business card, I'll send you copies of all three presentations that I did. In fact, I could do something even better. It's up to you. I have a team of coaches. They are not salespeople. They could call you and actually help you get started with this for free, no catch. So we'll see what you think. And if you say yes, I'll do that too. Ready to jump in? So, on the way out, we'll drop all those cards off. Don't worry about it now, because we have tons of content to go over. Frenetic pace. If you're using a service, Constant Contact is a service. There are more than 100 of them. Many of them are quite good. They all supply tracking. You know, what day did you send it? What time of day did it get open? What day of week did it get open? Who clicked on what? If it wasn't deliverable, how come? Which ones? So what do you do with all that? I'll try to summarize it for you, because you are kind of time-pressed, I have gathered. I did nonprofit for 5 years, and I thought that I wore a lot of hats. And in the last few days, trying to put myself in your shoes, I'm overwhelmed. I can't even imagine. You do everything. You're a therapist and counselor and organizer. All right, why email? I think we should start here, because this is a fair question. There are skeptics out there. I read last year, it was in every major paper, very famous quote, email is dead. Now that was from the CFO of Facebook, so maybe a bit of a conflict of interest. But nonetheless, I read it, and I'm not gonna shy away from it. I read that email is dead. 2 months later, I read that Facebook is dead, so I felt a little bit better. 2 months ago, the cover story of Wired magazine, the web is dead. And 2 weeks ago, in every paper, blogging is dead. I don't know about you, but somehow I miss those funerals because I still use all those tools. Let me ask you this. So we've been talking about social media the last few days and we're hot about social media. How many of you have tweeted today? One. How many of you updated your Facebook page today? Ooh, four. How many of you have checked your email today? Case closed, thank you. That's why we talked about email. 95% of internet users between the ages of 18 and 64 do email. America Online did a study last year. More than half of you check your email more than 5 times a day. Ooh, we're pretty obsessed with it. If you have an iPhone, you didn't buy the iPhone because of the great call quality that AT&T gave you. It's your communication device, and email and social has become so important. It takes precedence over voice. That's profound. Right away, you might say, well, wait, come on. A lot of my members are senior citizens. They're over 65, and I want to communicate with them, and they don't do email at all, right? Wrong. Fastest growing demographic by more than double over any other age group. In most cases, it is the sole reason they went out and bought a computer. At 75, you didn't hop out of bed because you want to go master PowerPoint. All right, at 75, you didn't hop out of bed, period. But you went and you bought a computer because you want to communicate with your friends and family. And email's how we do it. So that's 235 million people just in the United States doing email every day, multiple times per day. If you want to communicate, you can't ignore email, period. When we survey consumers, consumers become smart, professional consumers. We know that traditional marketing exists solely to sell something. When we see a billboard or an ad on TV, we know that that costs at least 100 grand to produce. $1 million if it's in even 9 major markets. And we know it exists solely to sell us something. Email is more about personal communication. It shouldn't be, you know, buy my stuff. I know you love what you do, but it can't be all promotional. It has to be a connection there. And that's where email is incredibly powerful. When we survey consumers, more than 2/3 of them say they prefer email as the communication vehicle, as the channel, over anything else. It's non-intrusive. I can opt in, I can opt out, I can ignore it, I can delete it. When I pay 10 bucks to go see a movie and they show me commercials beforehand and I'm stuck there, that's irritating to me. Email, I have a lot more power over. That's why I like it. I love direct mail, and I know many of you still do direct mail. When we talk from a pure business sense, the average return on investment on direct mail is quite good. The average return on investment on email is 20 times better, period, done. 20 times better. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't market in a variety of ways. I think you should do direct mail sometimes. I think ideal marketing is a mix of different tools. I like them all. I think to not have email as an important part of that mix is insane. And because it's so inexpensive, if your budget is very small, maybe this is all you do. I mean, email marketing starts at 15 bucks a month. You can send to 500 people as often as you like for $15. I mean, nothing else really touches it. So the average return on investment from a business standpoint is more than $44 for every dollar you put into it. That's remarkable. Nothing else is close. I mean, I know none of you went to the casinos here in Vegas, but I promise you their average return on investment is not more than $44 per dollar. It's not the opposite way around. I mean, if there's a bank in Las Vegas having a special promotion today, and they said for every dollar you turn in, we'll give you $44 back, we'd all be in that line. It'd be the longest line in the history of Earth. And we finally made it to the front, we take our new money and go to the back again. It'd be crazy not to. But that's average on email. What's the average email you get in your inbox? Is it fantastic? Send on the best time of day, best day of week, great subject line? No, it's bad. The average email is weak. If the average email is getting that, what about email done really well? It's phenomenal. It's astronomical. It's almost incalculably high. So this afternoon, we're not going to focus on average. I'll try not to give you very many averages, because I want you to focus on how high is high. For it to work well, it needs to be professional looking. These nice looking HTML emails, it's not just that they look nicer than a plain text email, they get up to 8 times the action over a plain text email. That's opens, clicks, event invitations, and RSVPs, donations. So when I first started doing email marketing 20 years ago, HTML was not even an option. You could only do plain text. Later, when this became possible, I had to learn how to do HTML code by hand. How many of you have so much spare time on your hands, that's what you want to go do with an extra hour or two, is learn how to do it? Yeah, no, you don't. So when Constant Contact was created, what was unusual about it is they had templates. You could go in, if you could type or paste in your content, you could have something nice looking in minutes. So it was like this level of the playing field between really big businesses and nonprofits and small businesses.
Excuse me, can I ask something?
Please.
Some people have it set in their computers that they only want plain text. So how does this come
in? If they only accept plain text, we actually always send both. And if they don't want the HTML version, the plain text one's delivered instead automatically. You don't even have to do anything. Okay. Great question. It needs to go to an interested audience. Yeah, I could go buy a list of my entire community, and I could send them email. They don't know me. They're really not interested in me, and I'm becoming the accidental spam. That's going to be my book. Hopefully the movie with Meryl Streep, The Accidental Spammer. Most small businesses and nonprofits that spam do so completely by accident. Technically, according to the Can Spam Act, if you're a nonprofit, there's no such thing. You can't violate the Can Spam Act. You can send it to anybody you want as often as you want, and it's not illegal. But that's the legality of spam. The reality of spam is very different. The reality of spam is if I didn't give you permission, if I don't like what you send, if you send it to me too often, to me you're a spammer. Now I don't like you, and I don't want to come see you anymore. I'm going to tell my friends not to. So it definitely backfires on you. So you need to grow email lists the natural way, the permission-based way, and that doesn't take forever or eons. You can actually build your list quite fast. I'm going to focus on that in a few minutes. It needs to contain information the recipient finds valuable. Your mission is phenomenal, but you have to have things in your emails that everybody's going to enjoy reading. They might not be as excited as you are right now, right? They might not be at the same stage you are. So when you're talking about it, you talk about other things like events or things that have happened or things that impact everyone on your list. Make sure it's interesting to all your recipients and not just a few. To show you how easy it is, I was approached by Curves International last year. You're familiar with them, Women's Fitness? They said, here's our website. We want to use one of your templates. We looked at them. There's more than 500 of them, but none of them look exactly like this. So we need a custom template. I said, well, no, you can change every element of every template. Give me a few minutes. They said, well, no, you don't understand. We've got this very stylized logo, and this background is not just a solid color. It's an image. It's textured. I went into the template picker. I picked a newsletter template, this one called Gradient. There you are. It looks just like theirs, yeah? All right, I needed a few more minutes. I put in their logo. I changed the background to match theirs. I pasted in their context, and there's the email. There's their website. Virtually identical in 9 minutes. Now, I've used it a long time. So 9 minutes for me might be longer for you. 11, 12, 2 hours. But nonetheless, it can be done, and that's the point. Yes, Andy.
Come on.
Yes.
So, can I call a question? How can I say, hey, you know, you walk me through this?
Yes. And they will hold your hand happily and walk you through it. They're paid very well. There's more than 300 of them. And if they don't treat you incredibly well to where your socks are knocked off, you call me up and I will fix it.
Can I just say, you mentioned I spoke to my secretary who was manually inputting names into the contact at her lawyer office. She just sent me a thank you note saying how fantastic you guys were and that it saved her so much time.
Excellent.
I actually got a thank you note from my secretary.
Well, we hear that. I mean, to us, that is so important. I mean, just here's an aside. I'm going to tell you some inside stuff. We're 11 years old. 2 years ago, we had a big party, so we hit 100,000 customers. Today, 2 years later, we're just shy of 500,000. And more than half of those come through referrals. We've won the Stevie Award twice for customer service. We're the smallest business in history to win it. So it's a huge differentiator. We know this is very complicated. We've tried to make it as easy as possible. We have a long way to go. But in the meantime, we will happily hold your hand on the phone, via email, via live chat, to walk you through anything you need. Even big companies, huge marketing entities, famous names, don't do email marketing well necessarily. In fact, I'd say most don't do it well. You can do email marketing better tonight than some of the world's most famous brands do. Is that exciting? I hope so. Gosh, I got this in my inbox last year. It's from a very famous brand, but I'll give it away right now. It's from Cirque du Soleil. Who's better at marketing than Cirque du Soleil? By the way, their marketing budget is more than $100 million a year. How many of you have a marketing budget that size? So look, they make a huge mistake. They rely on images to convey much of their message. As you know, most email clients, and when I say email client, I mean the software you use to read your email. Outlook, Yahoo, Gmail, those are all email clients. By default, they block images until the recipient says it's okay to download them. And they block them, they have a box with red dot in it. So rule number one, best practice number one, don't make your message rely on images to convey that message. Make sure the text does that. The images are there to kind of back it up and add to it. Best practice number two, if you're using us, we allow you to put text behind your images. And you can do this by hand as well if you're doing it on your own. So instead of a box with a dot in it, it can say, this is from Constant Contact, please download images. So best practice number two, always put text behind every image, usually your brand, you know, the name of the synagogue, temple, so people know who it's from, then they'll go ahead and download images. Cirque du Soleil, $100 million budget. This one's from Audi, and I can't wait, usually I wait to the end. $500 million marketing budget per year. So I won't even ask, because if you don't have $100 million, I can do the math, you don't have $500 million. Huge image, when blocked, all you see is the legalese at the bottom. The reason I'm on their list is because a year and a half ago, I bought two new cars, his and hers, that's how I get dates, or usually, you know, I buy a car, and it doesn't work, the lease is up. Even their legalese at the bottom was done poorly, it's black text on gray background. Reading speed on a computer screen is 30% slower than print. You have to make it easier to read, not more difficult. That means it should be black or dark text on a white or light background. Opposite of print, fonts. Fonts with curly cues, with serifs, like Times New Roman, easier to read in print, more difficult to read on a computer screen. On a computer screen, sans serif fonts, like Arial, Tahoma, are easier to read than one with. So they failed every which way possible, but nonetheless, I read the fine print. I see it's from Audi, I'll go ahead and I'll okay this image. Wow, that's way better. It says, Ron, you should come and buy this new car. I don't know about you, I don't buy a new car every 12 months or 30, I'll wait a year and a half before I buy a new car. So they make a huge mistake when it comes to email. They take every email address they collect, they dump them all into one bucket, and they send the same message to everybody. They should have more than one list, you should have more than one list. They should have a list of people who bought an SUV, people who bought a luxury car, people who bought a sports car, people who came and didn't buy anything, and the message should be different for each one of those groups. You already, you just thought of six lists, am I right? These type of participants, these members, these donors, and the message can be targeted. You know that targeted messaging works better than any other kind of marketing. Audi doesn't get that yet, you get that right now. The more specific you can make it, the more impact it will have. This is where email really shines and traditional marketing is weak. TV, television, I mean, name any of them. TV, you do a lot of TV ads, right? Because they're so inexpensive, national ads for the temple. With a TV ad, let's say though I give you a grant of $10 million to do TV ads, $10 million, and you do ads. Can you say, I want this ad, this message to go to these homes, and this different message to go to these homes? No, but you can do that with email. With email, if they like your message, they can forward it to their friends. You can't do that with a TV commercial. At a fraction of cost, it has a lot of advantages.
I just want to the point, is there a way that now we could be sending that out there and one could see it, access the image, or not, using email?
Tell me again, what do you mean?
Because the first thing you showed us was just the dot.
Where it's blocked, yes.
And then here, comes through.
Only because I said it was okay.
Right.
So by default, in an email client, it's gonna look like that.
Right.
So when I click on a button that says, go ahead and download images, then I get this.
So is your point that they shouldn't have done that? They
absolutely should not have.
But is that, I'm sorry, I'm confused, because I thought it had to do with the recipient's settings that it comes through.
But by default, every email client, major one, is set up to block images.
Okay.
So in most cases, way more than 50%, they're going to see this unless they've already added you to their address book or said it's okay to download images automatically from your email.
What can
Audi
do about that?
What can you do?
What would Audi do?
What would we do?
What Audi should do is instead of making their whole thing an image, I mean, basically, they went into Photoshop and this text, this is just a big picture.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Make sure your text is real text.
The text
that's separate.
Is the core.
It's acceptable.
Exactly. Make sure your message doesn't rely on images to convey the message. Make sure the text, here's the rule. If they don't download images, if they don't see any of my images, will this still make sense?
Okay.
Yes, it should be the answer. If not, you have failed.
So the Constant Contact email, the background is an image. The text
you,
is not.
You can put in as many images as you like, but we also like the text.
What about the background, the template?
The outside part, that's an image typically, or
that's
can be an image.
Okay.
But a lot of email clients like Outlook don't download background images anyway.
Okay.
So don't get too excited by the background, because a lot of people aren't ever going to see it. Here's a best practice, though, that gets around all these problems. Who cares what kind of email client they have? Who cares if they download images or not? Do this, and we do this for you automatically. For every email you create, create a web page version of that email. So this is what the email looks like in most email clients, but let's say that they've got an old Trio that only does plain text. They click on that link, can't see this or view his web page, it opens up their web browser automatically, and there's your email exactly the way you created it. Foolproof.
Any association between the web page that's created through this message and the actual website or of your organization?
No.
Is there a way to connect them or no?
Well, we host this for you. So without getting too complicated, the fact that we host this, any links you have here that go to your website, imagine the volume that our servers get. The way Google works is they give a lot more points to heavyweight servers that are sending you somewhere. So if people find this and they click on the link to go to your website, you get huge Google juice, because it's hosted by us. So always make sure you're linking back to your own website instead of just this hosted page.
Well, I click to continue there?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, when you click to continue, I suggest that always go to your website.
So that goes to your website.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that more in a moment.
When you're on the custom deck setup page, do you have...
It's automatic. What you have control over, you can turn it off if you want to. I don't know why you'd want to not make that viewable as a web page. You can also make the words say whatever you want. So by default, it says, if you can't see images, click here. You could say, if you want to view his web page, click here. If you've got a crummy old email client, click here. All right, maybe not a good idea, but you get the idea. Anything you want, you always have complete control. This is a perfect example of why you can't do email marketing on your own anymore. Spam has become a huge problem. It's hard to get bulk email delivered. But nonetheless, the USTA did. This is from the United States Tennis Association, the USTA. I'm a member because I'm a serious player. I'm not very good, but I'm very serious. I'm on their list. And this was the launch of their email marketing in September of 2006. I like changing here some of the names. Everything else, it really is exactly how I got it. In September of 2006, they're doing it on their own in Outlook. I liked them a lot. So I waited a few days to cool down, and I gave them a call because I wanted to help them. I said, first, I'm worried because it's plain text. That gets 1/8 the action of an HTML email. And they said, look, there's no way we have time to learn how to do that. This will have to do. Okay. I'm really worried that you're sending to all these people in the two line. What happens if somebody hits reply all and they have something bad to say about you? And they said, like most of you would, we're the USTA, everyone loves us, that would never happen. So I said, well, I'm concerned that maybe these people don't want their email addresses shared with everyone else on your list. They said, that's serious. We got some calls and complaints already. I said, but we did it differently. We sent our second one already today. We did it differently. It's way better. I said, I'm not finished. Email guy. The way spam filters work is they assign a point value to different events in your email. If you have a naughty word in the subject line, you get a lot of points. If you have a misspelled word in the subject line, you get points too. A fraction of a point, not enough to get you blocked. But once you get over a certain point threshold, you're either blocked or you're in the junk folder. The biggest spam score you can get is doing a bulk send from Outlook, Yahoo, Gmail, from anything. Bulk send. You're almost dead in the water. And they said, well, we read about that, and we sent out our second one today, and we made some changes. First, we put them all in the BCC line, so people wouldn't see them. We don't have to worry about reply all. And we read that most of the ISPs only kick in that spam score thing if it's 10 or more email addresses at a time. So we copied and pasted them 9 at a time. I said, that's the kludgiest workaround ever, but okay, I guess it'll function. How big is your list? You can't make this up. 1,100. So seriously, I want to get this right. You copied and pasted 9 email addresses at a time, added your list of 1,100 to get around the spam filters. They said, yeah. And how long did that take you? All day. And how often are you going to be doing this? Twice a month. I said, why on earth would you do that? And this is the best part, I think. Ron, you wouldn't understand. Email marketing really works. It's powerful. Love it. I said, now, I get that part. Why wouldn't you use a service? I don't care which one. Constant contact would be nice. And they said, because that costs thousands of dollars. I said, no, it starts at $15 a month. It's based on how many subscribers you have. So between 501 and 2500, it's $30 a month. And had silence on the phone because this is a board member, a volunteer, donating 16 hours a month to do this. He normally teaches tennis at $100 an hour. So I did this for them instead. Go ahead, go, ooh, I did this. I'm on the board now, it's totally true. So we started doing this in October of 2006. I like that it's pretty. I could care less that it's pretty. I'm a bottom line results guy, impact only, that's all I care about. They're a nonprofit, but they need revenue to succeed, to exist, to grow. Most of their revenue comes from tournament fees. When you play in a tournament, you have to pay. People would forget there was even one coming up. You can't miss this in your inbox. It pops out. You scroll down, you click on a link, you sign up. Since doing this in October of 2006, tournament play has gone up and held 40%. They've had a 40% increase in revenue. What would you do with a 40% increase in revenue? Okay, you just expanded the temple and you're going on a trip with everybody. So back to reality. Their open rate's been phenomenal. How high is high? Their average open rate for 5 years almost is 70%, 7-0. That's crazy high. I can tell you 30% is like the golden. If you're at 30%, you're doing a great job. So if you're at 12%, we can get you to 30 pretty fast. 70 is astronomically high, but I can tell you with a straight face it's possible and sustainable because they've done it. Click-throughs, visit our website, make a donation, sign up for this tournament. Average on commercial email is around 2%. They've averaged 40% for 5 years. So how high is high? I can tell you with a straight face, this is sustainable. Email works because people keep email and open email from those they don't trust. Unique thing about email versus anything else, they'll create a folder in Outlook or Gmail or Yahoo, and they will keep it if it's good. They'll forward it to their friends. Direct mail. I'm this huge marketing fan, right? I could go out to my mailbox and find the best looking direct mail piece I've seen in my life, and I'd get super excited about it, but I would never make 100 photocopies and mail it to my friends. Email, you click on a button, you forward it to everybody you know in less than a second. That's pretty phenomenal. You know, I'm down the block talking to my neighbor about tennis, and they say, I would play way more often, but my backhand is so bad, it's pointless for me to even step on the court. I'm like, wait a minute. Last year sometime, I got this newsletter from the USTA that had an article that will fix your backhand. I'll go forward it to you. What other marketing works like that? How many of you keep every flyer, clipping, ad, cut stuff out, and keep it in folders in your office for more than a year? Don't raise your hand if you do, we're going to laugh at you. All right, good, not what you're doing. Email people keep if it's good. If it's powerful, and you have so much powerful content, they will forward it to everyone they know. You say something that hits home, that really resonates, and you probably do that weekly, you're going to forward it to everybody they know. You want to know why we forward stuff? We kind of get credit for it. When you first started to do an email, you got on one of those lists of your friends and they would send you funny stuff, right? It was awesome like three times. When it's three times a day for 3 months, you want to know how you can get out of it. So why bother? Why would I bother sending you something that makes you laugh? What do I get out of it? You get chemicals when you laugh. They're endorphins that make you feel better. You now associate that with me. And so I make you feel better, or at least that's the association. I love that positive association. So I'm going to always forward good stuff that makes me look good. Whether it's a powerful promotion or a powerful message. Thanks for being so patient.
Yeah, my question was, so we're using Constant Contact to send out a weekly email. You guys will appreciate this. E-Garrett. So anyway, many of our congregants don't open it anymore. They just,
So the number one reason open rates drop is over communication, too much email from you. But there are other things you can do to improve open rate, and we're going to discuss those. Time of day of the week, number of characters in the circle, all matters.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Many of us have noticed that our kids don't use email anymore.
Yeah.
They will text or they will message on Facebook, but they.
So typically, kids don't start to do email until they go to work. Then they have to. So under 18, texting is more popular than email, but email is not unpopular. In fact, most kids go out and get an email address, not to join a social network, as required, but to buy something. Number one reason they do it is to take action. So it's an excellent, powerful list of kids who want to take action on things. So is it a strong fit for 16-year-old is textiness? No. But is it valueless? Absolutely not. Everything else we just delete, we call this spam. We have the canned spam app, so none of you get any more spam email, right?
Right.
All right. So when you ask yourself why do people bother to do this, it turns out that 1 in 600 million recipients buy something from a spam email. If you send out 3 billion a day, you're in business. And so don't write that down, because you can't tell your kids what you do, your friends won't like you, you have to live offshore. I'll show you how to do better the legitimate way. How are we doing? I should stop and take a breath. I'm talking very fast because I'm very excited. I am a professional presenter. I know to slow down. So if I'm way too machine gun, please raise your hand and yell at me.
And just to follow up on the question, so I guess you were saying before that, you know, and you will be speaking additionally about how to cut down extraneous emails, but I'm just wondering how to decide what to do email for and what to use like a constant contact email for. In other words, we tended to reserve that just this once a week sending out.
Yeah, so for personal email. It's going to be
committed. You wouldn't do a template.
I would. When I went to the Y, I had a template for my board. When I sent stuff to them, I had a different template for other things. I want to look as professional as possible. I want to knock their socks off. I want to show them how professional I am and how professional my communications are.
Okay, but if it's in the form of kind of like giving them a message or whatever, but not if you're like planning a meeting with a group of committee members.
I don't know that I wouldn't use constant contact for that. Yeah, I would consider it. It just, you know, once you have the template done, it's easy. It's the same as doing an Outlook email.
Right.
And it's actionable. You can see if you opened it or not. I didn't get it. Oh, yes, you did. You opened it at 3:03 p.m. on Thursday.
Is there any integration with Facebook? For example, if you, I know that you can post a link to a particular web page on your Facebook with little comments. So if it's true that a particular email, constant contact message can be viewed as a web page, can you post that web page?
There's just a bar at the end of each email where they can like it, they can post it on Facebook, they can share it on Twitter, and you get reporting on all that as well. You know who shared it, who liked it, how many people.
And when it's shared, it's that web page that's using
right, those exactly. You got it. That's why we had to change our platform to add a web page version, because social has become important. How are we doing so far?
Great.
It's already way better than we thought it was going to be, isn't it? So I just stop now and go home. All right, onward. Let's go our list. We start out with friends and family, then we add our own members. We want more than that. We want the entire community. Anytime your staff answers the phone, ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. That's one of the first things I learned in nonprofit. Even over the phone, without going into detail, there's a guitar store in Denver, and they get calls all day long. You have Gibson guitars, Yamaha guitars. They say, yeah, we do come have a look. Over the last year, they've said, not only do we have Gibson guitars, we have a monthly newsletter where we talk about guitars. Can I add you to the list? 92% of the people who call give up an email address. 92%. 99% of walk-in traffic. If you don't ask, you don't get. Every time you go to an event or meeting, people have business cards. Their email address is on their business card, and they implied that you can email them. Implicit permission is not very strong. It's kind of gray. It's easy to take it up a notch just by asking. I've got your email address here. Can I add you to my list? I do this cool email newsletter. They'll say yes. Your personal email, your staff's email, the Outlook or Gmail, you've got a signature line at the bottom. It's got the name of your synagogue, right? It's got the address, the website address. How many of you have clicked here to sign up for our email newsletter or event announcements? How much email do you get, respond to, and send every day? It's just a link. Put it everywhere you can put a link, because then people are more likely to subscribe. Make it easy, not difficult. A guest book, probably more appropriate in business, but why not? Yes?
So what happens when they click here, then it's got to go to some link?
We have it all set up for you. It goes to a page and they just fill it out, you're good to go. A guest book is not a bad idea. We'd like to get our email communications. Just give us your email address and your online presence. On your website, on every page in a prominent location, they join our email list tag. With us, you can actually create that in your account for free. If you don't know how, call us and we'll walk you through it. LinkedIn, MySpace, Facebook. Again, if I'm so interested in you that I go to your blog, I read Gary's blog every week, it's amazing. If I'm that interested that I go there, don't you want to be able to capture me and make it, you know, 360? Put a sign-up link for our email newsletter on the blog, on the Facebook page. Tweet it out on occasion. Join our email list or whatever you want to say. Prominent location, every page. When I say every page, there's a reason for that. Now with Google, people don't come into your homepage very often. It's actually less than one-third of the time that they land on your homepage first. So this needs to be on every page. You don't know where they're going to land. Archive some of your emails. Take some of your best emails ever. Make web pages out of them. People are more likely to subscribe if they see what they're going to get first. You can do it on your own. We can do it for you. Give them an incentive to sign up right now. I'd have to use my imagination for you to decide what that was. For a business, like I say, you sign up right now for, you know, my tennis store newsletter, and you get 10 tennis tips from Rafael Nadal, one of the best players on earth. It could be a coupon, but it could be a special message. It could be a special event announcement. It probably won't be a discount code, but in your case, it could be something special that they get right now. It goes out as part of the welcome email that goes out automatically when someone subscribes. So you don't even have to do anything. When they click on that archive link, they see some of your best emails ever, and then boom, join our mailing list. They're more likely to subscribe if they see what they're going to get first. So if you have that sign-up book somewhere, you should print out your best-looking email ever and put it in plexiglass right next to it so people know what it is they're going to be getting. How many of you noticed that live survey, that live online poll on the previous page on their website? A few? So we have this too. You can do a live poll, just like MSNBC has. We have that feature. So for the tennis store, they want to know who's going to win Wimbledon this year. Is it going to be Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, or this Ron Cates guy? And I figured you probably want to know how that's going. Let's go live right now. Oh, I'm going to be so busy. I'm sorry. That's horrible. All right, forward to a friend. Don't you want every recipient to forward it to everyone they know so they can also become a subscriber? Of course. By default, the forward to a friend link goes at the bottom. You can put it anywhere. Up top, it gets much more attention than anywhere else. So if that's important to you, I'm going to put it up top. Forward newsletter, that's a little vague. It's not a strong call to action. Please forward two, three friends. We'll double your forward rate. Put it up top or forward it again. It will double it again. So a good forward rate is 0.5%. I've had months at 4%. By the way, I did everything to grow my list that I told you to do, nothing extra. 5 years ago, I had 1,055 subscribers to my personal list, and I have more than 300,000. So when you have 4% forward rate and your list is bigger than 100,000, that is a huge growth in your list without doing any work or paying a dime. Yes?
So yeah, but and I think this is many of us in our sitting our colleagues, what you would call them. Most of us have sitting our colleagues started long before there was email. Many of us now have transitioned where we're making that newsletter available either on our website or by emailing it.
Right.
But there's still a good portion of our people who want the scanning. The problem is we're still making, we use constant contact, but not for our newsletter. So we're still producing a newsletter the same way we always did.
Yes.
And then we're somehow doing a PDF or something of it to put it online. Now by doing that, we can't take advantage of any of the kind of things we're talking about now.
Yeah, but so knowing that 95% of your members have email, is it time to retire your print newsletter? And I got to ask, how much does it cost you?
The answer is absolutely fine, but there is a certain percentage of our older members, even though they do get email, they don't know that.
Well, we do it, what about quarterly? Just instead of it being a real timely PR vehicle, it just becomes something that people enjoy reading four times a year? It doesn't necessarily. It doesn't.
It's also 12 to 16 pages. People don't want to read that much on an email.
They want to read it back.
Right.
They won't read it in print anymore either, unfortunately. Today, people want concise. They want bullet points. And in email, you're absolutely right. They will not read your long email. They'll scan it for 30 seconds. If it's fantastic, they'll scan it for 2.5 minutes. It needs to be short and to the point. Email is a different vehicle than print. So you just can't take your print material and copy and paste it into an email. Email needs to be shorter, more concise, more to the point, and more in your own voice. It should definitely be conversational more than how you would write a print article. This is from a small business in Phoenix, an attractive email newsletter. It has a huge flaw. It's one of the first things we talked about, and huge is a hint. So what's wrong with this? That is a gigantic header image. And if I don't download images, or I look at it in preview pane, which more than half the people in Outlook do, that's a lot of white space with nothing else. I'm going to recommend that your header image, no matter how beautiful it is, not be taller than 150 to 175 pixels tall. I want to see content, even if I'm just looking at preview pane, so I know who it's from, and I'm grabbed by it, and there's a call to action, and I open it. Big header image might be beautiful, but will not work to your advantage.
It's also all
what's that?
It's also all sans serif.
Yeah, there, so. For this to work at all, you have to be a trusted sender. You have a lot going in your favor already because you are such trusted people. But nonetheless, at the top of every email, I'm a huge advocate for this, and I've done a lot of testing. Plain text, the first thing they should see is here's why you're getting this. You're getting this because you're a member, because you're a subscriber, whatever the reason is. If I went to an event last week and collected business cards, the first time I sent to that list, it's going to say, you're getting this because we met at the XYZ event last week, and you said I could add you to my list, so I did. Right up front, because they'll forget they gave permission. They won't recognize who it's from. This they will always see first, plain text. Include an unsubscribe mechanism. If you're doing this on your own, the canned spam act says, you have 10 business days to remove someone from your list when they request an opt-out, and you have to have a conspicuous unsubscribe mechanism. So we actually have this in every email. You can't take it out. It's a well-known brand. When people click on it, they know that they get to leave. We don't support spam. We're the strongest anti-spam service. So nonetheless, people will ask me, I'll save you the time, will come up to me afterwards and say, okay, I know we have to have that. It's the law, but what's the smallest font you guys have for that? Is there such a thing as a half-point font? Because we worked really hard to get these subscribers, so we don't want them to opt out so easily. It turns out the more conspicuous you make this, the bigger, the more often you repeat it, the fewer opt-outs you get. You know, what's missing in a real spammer email is a real way to opt out. Well-known brand, if I don't want it, I'm out. That works to your advantage. You don't want people on your list who don't want the message anyway.
Why? You're saying people see this, more often than not, they'll choose to keep it because...
Yeah, let's say you send me an email, let's say you had a, I know it's impossible, but let's say you had a Slack week and it is not the most enjoyable email content ever. I get it, I go, well, I'm not fond of this, but it's real easy to get out, I'll give it another week and see. And you're not going to have two bad weeks in a row. So it works to your advantage, don't be afraid of it. Number one reason people opt out, too much communication. That should lead to a logical question. How much is too much? That's the question that no email person will ever answer, but I will. If I'm not going to do it right now, I'm going to make you wait for it. I learned this from American Idol. Results after the break. I'm going to make sure you're not going anywhere. I've got a revolutionary theory, at least. We'll talk about it shortly. This is where I get to scare you, so I love this slide. I think you should have objectives for your email before you send. What is the goal? Well, I haven't done one in a while. I guess no, that's terrible. Am I trying to raise awareness? Am I trying to get donations, support, financial support? Am I trying to get more people to come to this event? What's the point of this email? Decide beforehand what your objective is, rather than just send it out. Sometimes you'll be planting seeds for something in the future. When I went to go help the local YMCA raise money, it was like, wow, this is great. You could do click to donate, click to support. I said, that's probably not a good strategy. Instead, for 5 months, because their big campaign was 6 months later, for 5 months I did emails that had no ask of any kind. No click to support, no click to donate. I wanted to build the relationship first. We taught this child how to swim today. We did daycare for this family that couldn't afford it otherwise. Build the relationship first. 6 months later, it's our annual campaign. You can click here and help us out. $350,000 per branch via email. Biggest campaign in the history of the YMCA. And if I didn't ask right from the start, I would have had a tiny fraction of that response. Yes?
And we have a membership based organization. And you know, it's a very interesting notion that we're actually, you're talking about establishing a relationship with people that, in fact, may not be members. And we may not therefore have a license to bill the dues, but you're talking about them being sort of maybe supporters in some way.
So you could you can have more than one list and decide what content goes to who. So where they're a bit more marginal, you know, kind of maybe it's different. But I don't mind showing off what I do. Hopefully, by showing off what I do, they're going to want to become full-fledged.
But it's interesting because the model is different. It used to be in our community that people didn't. People saw getting the newsletter as a privilege of membership.
I see.
And now you're seeing it very differently.
You're called, but you could certainly make it that way. You could say, oh, only members get this type of information. It is a bit special and elite. It's a gold card concept, where everyone else gets this content, which is not nearly as robust or as thorough. That's fine.
But it's always a potential for membership.
It's always potential, and hopefully they're going to end up moving over and becoming a member of the different list.
Now, one of our objectives, you know, using the Constant Contact, is to let people know of our events' awareness. But you have the amount of, it's like flyers that are posted one after another after another. You know, literally you can scroll down, the newsletter is huge.
Even though it's once a week, why not put maybe the three key events, and then to see our other events, click here, and let them go to the calendar that has all your events. Yeah. And don't put a bunch of information about each event. Make them click to find out more. That drives them to your site, which builds website traffic, and also plus the site is more actionable.
So one of the other questions that I'm a little confused about is, you know, so this is like a, let's say, a newsletter that goes out on a weekly newsletter. But we want to steer people to our website because that's robust. That's right. So where they can donate and they can.
I agree.
So this newsletter, you can't donate right from this newsletter. It hooks back to the website.
Well, you could donate right from the newsletter, but I think you're right. Rather than invade their inbox with promotional content, you know, intrigue them enough that they come to your site, and then everything changes. I have an example of that in a little bit. I think you'll like it. To show that I do everything, I have a story, and it's true. It was in Vegas. It was last year. It was a conference. Guess who? The American Christmas Tree Growers Association. It's like, how perfect, how ironic. And I spoke there, and I was so on that day. I think, well, not as good as today, but I was so on that day that they were ready to jump halfway through and go do email marketing. And at the end, when there were time for questions, there's always somebody, a skeptic, and he stood up and he said, okay, smart guy. And he did that too. And he said, okay, what are we going to send in February? And the whole room went, oh. Less than half a second it took me. I was so on my game that day. If it were me, I would take pictures of my kids. Okay, not my kids. I would rent better looking kids. I would take pictures of them planting the seeds for these trees in February so they bond with it and buy it in November. And the whole room exploded. It takes like 9 years to grow a tree, but hey, point being, it's no matter how seasonal your event, there's always a way to intrigue them well in advance. What contact information do you need to collect? You must collect email address to send an email. Anything else you collect, we can merge into an email. They could say, dear Ron Cates, dear Sue, how are things in Phoenix, Arizona? Thanks for your donation of $1 million. If that's real important to you, collect it. The reality is, it doesn't seem to impact action, open rates, click-throughs at all. So,
what do you mean?
You can personalize your emails. They can say, dear Ron, dear Carl, dear Sue, and it doesn't impact anything. It looks cute, but people know that you did not type in 300,000 first names.
So it's almost like a man merge.
Yeah, we have that ability. I want to make sure you know about it, but I'm not recommending that you do it because it doesn't have a big impact. Personalize your email in other ways. Like you take 2 minutes in a Sharpie and you sign your name, turn that into a JPEG, put that at the bottom so it looks like you hand signed it. That has way more impact than a dear Ron or dear Sue. Now don't use your legal signature. Some scammer will, you'll find out you bought 5 houses somewhere, you know, before long. So don't use your legal signature, but sign it. In this case, normally it's first name only. In this case, full name and title. What's the format gonna be? Promotional email, is it going to be event announcement, event reminder? What's the format going to be? Last year, more than half the people in the United States took action from a promotional email. They did something, they bought something, they clicked, they donated. And more than half the people who did that, this is really good to know, more than half the people who did that took action, didn't take action on anything that is mentioned in the email. So let me give you an example, so you don't pull your hair out talking about which events are coming up. The Gap, somehow I'm on their winter list, and I've got them the last 4 winters, Gap sweaters. I live in Phoenix, I don't own a sweater. But I wear khakis, so I go, yeah, they have khakis, and I went and I bought a pair. So when you want to look at the impact of your email campaign, you can't just look at, well, I mentioned this event and all these, you know, people signed up for it. There's other action happening way beyond that because you got in front of them and reminded them that you exist. I have a graph later. I can't wait. I'm excited. This just came out a few months ago. Almost a third, 31% of the people who don't open the email take action. Almost a third come in and make a purchase from a business, even if they didn't open the email. They saw the name, the brand, and the from name. They saw the offer and the subject line. That's enough to get them off their seat and to go do something. So never clean out your do not opens. They're very powerful nonetheless. Schedule. This should go on a regular basis. Not, well, I haven't done it in a while. So you're going to take the calendar. You need a gatekeeper. Tear out the pages, put it on a table, and decide if it's every Friday, if it's every other week, if it's once a month, when's it going to go out, and what's the production day? Usually the production day should not be the same day. You know, so you want to make it a few days before. And we actually have a feature where you can create it today and schedule it to go out anytime in the future. I said this the other day, I'll say it again. I have 3 kids in college, and I have emails going out to them more than 40 years from now just to scare them. I'm still watching you. And very disappointed, etc. Yes, you have to build these. That's production day. We give you results on everything that can be tracked. You need to at least glance at that so you can tweak your strategy. Did this subject line improve my open rate? Did this day of week, time of day improve my open rate? What got clicked on the most? If I don't look, I can't. I have no strategy. I'm doing it randomly. You know, what worked and what didn't, and adjust. When they click on your sign-up link, no matter where you have it, in your email, on your website, they get this window. We host this for you, but you have complete control over it. And there's 2 pieces to it. On the left, you can actually make some of your lists public on this page, and they can tell you which lists they want to be on. So you can even get frequency here. You can have monthly newsletter, weekly communication, event announcements, and they can tell you what they're most interested in right up front. Caveats. People are not good about categorizing themselves, so don't give them a bunch of choices and try to make these fairly broad. On the right-hand side, you can collect any demographic information you like. You can even make it mandatory that they have to give it to you to become a subscriber. So if you wanted to, you could say, I must have your credit card number and social security number. How many subscribers will you get? 1 in 600 million is what I'm banking on. I know that people fatigue heavily at 4 fields. You will lose subscribers if you ask for more than 4 things. You will lose subscribers if you make anything mandatory. You will lose subscribers if you ask for personal information. I'm not going to give you my phone number. I don't want you to call me. I'm not going to give you my home address. I don't want you to stop by. I'll give you my first name and my zip code.
It's not asking for email.
Now, but that's always automatic. That's the very first thing, is email address. You put that in first. That's mandatory. But everything else is optional. I would not ask for a lot of things. I would not ask for personal stuff. I would not make anything mandatory. And I see some wheels spinning already because you're like me. Like, but I want that. I want to know where they're coming from. I want their address. I want to be able to mail them stuff. I want to know if they're male or female. I want to know all this stuff. It's very important to me. I want it. It's valuable. This is not the place to get it. But I still want it. This is not the place to get it. Here's somewhere else you could get it. You put on events all the time. We have an event registration tool online. Put on an event. When they sign up for an event, their mindset is completely different. They'll tell you everything. They'll tell you shoe size. They'll tell you weight. When they sign up for an event, it automatically populates your email database at the same time. So that's a way to get lots of information by using the event tool, without asking for it via email subscription, where they will not give it to. Best days to send in the United States and Canada are middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, typically. And I love 10:30 in the morning and 1:30 in the afternoon. They're my 2 favorite times. The spammers, I assume, based on how I get my email, they must work nights and weekends. Because Monday morning I come in and my inbox is just full. And even stuff that I'm pretty interested in, I have to defer it to later because there's so much stuff. And later on I come back and I'm so busy, I just delete all that. I don't have time, period. On Monday, I clean out my inbox in a big way. I come in Tuesday morning, clean it out again. It's not as much of a mess. But at 10:30, your email comes in, I probably have time to spend on it. Same thing at 1:30 in the afternoon after lunch. Your mileage may vary. If I had a movie theater, I'd send you something Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon, and click here to sign up for the ticket before you go do something else with your money this weekend. Services, it might be the day before, might make the most sense. So experiment is the point. You try things, you cut your list in half, you send out half Tuesday morning at 10:30, and you send out half Friday afternoon and see what happens. You see which one gets open the most. It's that easy. Yes?
Am I correct in assuming consistency is most important?
Absolutely. Yes. Although you do need to experiment some in the beginning to find out what works the best. You can also go in as a shortcut, and you can actually see when people open your emails. So you can, well, most of them are open at this day or this time. I might as well just go ahead and send it to them. The goal is to have big impact and small intrusion. People aren't going to read your long emails, but you want a huge impact. Small intrusion, big impact, that's always your focus. I'm always tweaking this, I'm always trying to make it better, and that phrase doesn't resonate. So at 2:30 in the morning, I was in Denver, the night before a seminar, I couldn't sleep, and I had an epiphany. Email ninja. I wanted to be an email ninja. I wanted to go and silently make a killing and get back out. And I wrote down the words email ninja at 2:30 a.m. At 3 a.m. I got back up because I have a dog at home. She's an Akita, and her name is Ninja. So I was thinking tomorrow morning, I'm going to read this note and wonder, why did I want to email my dog? She doesn't even do email, she only does text. So I registered the domain name emailninja.com at 3:03 a.m. You can look it up, but why would you? Sorry. Onward. Here's what we've been waiting for. How often can you send stuff, and how much quote-unquote promotional content can you get away with? And I left this in the context of a business because I think you get it. I think how often you send and how heavy you can ask depends on the quality and strength of the relationship. That's why you have more than one list. Where it's weak, they're just a prospect, I'm not going to send nearly as often, and I'm not going to send as much promotional or ask type content. Where it's strong, I have a huge relationship. I can send a lot. I mean, I recognize this person by name. I see them all the time. I can send a lot more often. And I can send more promotional content instead of just educational content. And in the context of a tennis store, you know, let's say I'm in there all the time, and they know my name, they string my rackets on the spot. They could send me this every Wednesday. And here's the new strings, rackets, shoes are going to help you play better, click to buy. I would think that was neat. If she went into the store one time ever 3 months ago just to buy a can of tennis balls, and she starts getting this every week, she's going to think they're a spammer. So for her, that's a whole different list and a whole different message. Where it's a weaker relationship, I'm not going to send this off. I'm going to send once a month. I'm going to send just educational content. Here's an article on how to improve your forehand. I mean, I almost don't care how you got your list. Who's going to be offended by this? People are very protective of their email inbox. And if you ask of them, that can be a turnoff. And it's tempting to ask because we need help, we need support. If I send this to you, I don't care how protective you are of your email inbox, I don't think you're going to be insulted. Nonetheless, as a business person, if someone was a synagogue, I still need to drive membership. I want to reach more people. I have things I must accomplish that this doesn't do. So if I had a business, how does this work for me? What's the point? Why would I bother to waste my time doing this? How does this help my business? I'm going to stay top of mind. I'm elevating myself by showing off my expertise. They're going to look forward to my next communication. That's fantastic. You've been paying attention. Thank you. Now, I have 3 kids in college, really. I'm not making that up. I need money today. How does this work for me right now? Down at the bottom, it says click to continue. Where's that go?
It's
my website. Now, everything changed. I did not invade their inbox with promotional content. They chose, excited of their own free will, volunteered to come visit my website. Now the votes are off. I'm always going to have push content, promotional content, related to the educational content right next to it on my site. When they come to my site, I have the entire article on how to improve their forehand, and right next to it, we're having a special on strings. They help improve the power of your forehand. Click here for string specials. Again, educational content, and then definitely pitch the event associated with this kind of content. Click here to register for this event that has something to do with this content and treatment. That is pure gold. That's as strong as email marketing can get. And this is fictional, so let's talk real. Small business in Colorado. Two people, that's it, husband, wife, that's the entire staff. And you know, you talk about a narrow niche, they do custom fly for bass fishing. They're not even in a major metro, they're in rural Colorado. What do? Custom fly for bass fishing. Let me buy you lunch, because you probably haven't eaten in a while. They have a big list. They have a huge open tree, because they know everything about bass fishing. They're not great writers, quirky style of writing, but people can't wait to open it and read it and learn about bass fishing. I think you can see a parallel. I can't wait to open and see what Bruce has to say. So last year they did a subject line that was too long, but it was super powerful. See the biggest bass ever caught in Colorado. You open it up and there's a little picture, 100 by 100 pixel picture in the email of the biggest bass ever caught in Colorado. And below it says, click here to see a bigger image. Where does that go? That's their website. And they were truthful. They had a big picture of the biggest bass ever caught in Colorado on their website. Below it on the right, click here and you can buy the fly that is used to catch this bass. That's genius. Now, that's genius. I don't know what this is. I don't have a word for it. But on the left, they do trips. If you click here, they throw in the fly. They take you to the exact spot where the biggest bass ever caught in Colorado was caught. We talked in the beginning how the average return on investment on email is more than $44 every dollar you put into it, and that's really cool. How much real dollar revenue did they generate from one really clever email? $85,000. Okay, and they've said, I can tell you this, that's more revenue than they did the previous year total. Doubled their year with one very clever email. So I like the $44 per dollar, but I like the $85,000 email. I like the fact that we got $350,000 per branch in donations with the YMCA by doing the email properly.
They sell those flies to us at discounts.
Yeah, I'm sure. Front line.
How are we doing on time? Did I have another 2 hours?
9 minutes.
But I don't want to go home.
No.
Frontline, who cares? Well, your recipients care. 60% of them decide whether to open or not based on what that says. Well, what else could it say? It's me. There's two pieces to from. There's the from name and the from email address. If you use Outlook and I send you an email, you'll see both. Ron, it has my email address, has my name, has my email address in brackets. Not everyone uses Outlook. It's the seventh most popular email client. More popular is American Online Webmail. And American Online Webmail drops the from name and only displays the email address. So if it comes from my brother, the company, and my email address is ron1958@yahoo.com, and they only see that, they're not going to open that. They're not going to know who it is. Other email clients do the opposite. They drop the email address and only show the from name. You have to make sure that both pieces clearly indicate who you are, even individually standing. So yes, you should have a domain with your temple name in it, or it's just gotta be immediately identified. By the way, a real name at something gets opened more than a list app or a news app, whether they have any idea who that person is. So I recommend that it always come from a real person's name. 60% decide by this, 30% decide by the subject line. So look, I wanna make sure this hits. You could have the most amazing email ever. You could use the best delivery system ever. It could have phenomenal content. If you fail in these two places, the email will not be effective. 60% and 30%, this is huge. Subject line should be 40 characters or less. That includes spaces. It should never be more than 49. Two bad things happen. Open rates drop 11 or 12%. Click-throughs, visit my website, those drop 75%. You might as well not even send it. And as you're busy counting characters, don't get so caught up in the math that you don't look at it with common sense and say, if it gets truncated, will it still make sense? Crepes and Macho at a coffee shop. Our Brazilian dark roast that you won't want to miss out on. And in Outlook it says that you won't want. Neiman Marcus in November. This one's real. Neiman Marcus in November. Winter fashions you can't afford to miss. In my Outlook, it says, winter fashions you can't afford. Truth in advertising, yes. The message they intended, no. So That's ideal. Don't get so caught up in ideal that you don't send it. Send them a time of day, day of week. You got to send it for it to work. So don't get so crazy about the math that practicality falls aside. I have some examples for you. They should have a call to action. Ideally, and this would be almost impossible for you, so you won't be able to, ideally you'd have the brand in the subject line again. Typically your brand is going to be too long to make that happen and still have this be 40 characters or less. YMCA News, boring. YMCA News, colon, three spring swim tips. Now I know what's in this email and has a call to action to it if I want to learn about what they're doing with their swimming program. From Joe's Day Spa. Joe's Spa, 5 openings this Saturday, save 20%. Do you like that one? I think it's right to the point. Yeah. And it says you better jump on this because there's only 5. If you want the discount, you got to jump. Two tips are getting audited by the IRS. Do you like that one? Our CEO was being interviewed on NBC, and she mentioned this is a good subject line. I don't agree. I think half the audience will be intrigued by it. Oh, that's cute and clever. The other half is going to say, they don't know how to write a sentence. I'm not going to let them touch my money. Cute and clever fails. You can't assume the mindset of the recipient at the time they receive it. Maybe their mom's sick. I mean, you know, nothing's going to be cute or clever or funny. So the very best subject lines, the ones that get open most every single time, this is a big secret, they're the ones that tell exactly what's in the email. That's it. Tell exactly what's in the email. That gets higher open rates than anything else. Special offer for you. Is anybody going to open it? No. What if I really have a special offer for you? You're still not going to open it because spammers have stolen words and phrases from us that might even be legit. Cold calling stickers that really block. They left out one letter, the letter R, and it ruins it. They could have the greatest product ever, and now they appear amateurish and shoddy, unless it's for Asian cookware, right? Or Elmer Fudd really walks. But otherwise, yeah, how many times do you have to proofread your subject line? Until it's perfect, period. If you mess up there, you look amateurish. You look less professional. Shoddy work. Frank Borman used to say when he was head of Eastern Airlines, we clean our dining trays really well. If we don't, people assume we don't maintain our engines very well. It is that important. It's the first impression. What do we track? At everything that can be tracked. Who opened it? What time of day? If it wasn't deliverable, why? Which ones?
Do you track who actually opens it?
Yes. Who opened it? What time of day? What day of week? And it's interesting because open rate is actually, it's a misnomer. We can't stand over their shoulder and see that they opened it. So the way the industry does it is whether you have images in your email or not, we always have one. It's a tiny one-by-one pixel transparent image. And when they download images, we know they opened the email. If they clicked on something, we know they opened the email. If they don't do either of those things, it does not show up as an open. I mean, I can read your email and be impacted by it without downloading images and without clicking on anything. So more people read your email than show up at open rate, typically between 6 and 9% more than will show up as an open. That doesn't mean I don't care about it. It is a good apples-to-apples comparison nonetheless, but is it an absolute number? No way. If I read your whole email and I don't download images, don't click on anything, it doesn't count as an open. So what? 31% of people who don't open it take action. And yes, a small fraction of those are the people who read it but didn't download images, so it didn't count as an open. But the vast majority of these are people who really didn't touch it. They saw your name in the front line, they saw your offer, they saw the message in the subject line, and that had impact. Never clean out and do not open this. Click-throughs. I care about this a lot. They had to physically take action. Click here for more information. Now, here's something you might not have noticed. We have a feature with one button. You can save everybody who clicked on something as a new list automatically. Let that settle in. Hey, we're having this event. For more information about this event, click here. I make a new list out of them with one button. And a few days later, I send a very detailed follow-up with information about that event just to that list. This is very, very powerful, and you might have missed it. And lastly, what are you going to do next? I don't know. I'm not here to sell you something. So listen to my radio shows. Email marketing radio at emailmarketingradio.com. Social media innovation at socialmediainnovationradio.com. They're number one and number two on iTunes in digital marketing. So that's it. What questions do you have? Wow, you're just... Thank you. Right, really just, the last 3 days have been phenomenal for me. I love this. So what questions do you have? If you were going to rank this at a scale of 1 to 10, what did I miss that would make you cross out the 10 and put in 11? And I'll answer it right now. Bruce?
You're great.
Thank you.
I actually have a question from my colleagues.
Excellent. It's a good place to do it.
We spend about $20,000 on our print. And it doesn't seem like we're using that money wisely. What do you know about that? What do you all do?
Yeah. We do have some stakeholders that want print. Yes. They're going to be a small fraction. So you have to make a practical, and you have to make an excellent fiscal decision. You have fiscal responsibility. And a print newsletter just probably doesn't make sense anymore. I have several major cities in Arizona that have switched over to email from print. We're talking about police department, fire department, parks and recreation, city government, because they're saving more than $1 million. You know, they can't justify doing print for the 5 or 4% who prefer print.
Can I respond and then kick it to the colleagues a little bit further? We do it 4 times a year, but we do it all color. So it sits around the shul for a month or two. It's not timely. It's more like a magazine. If someone walks in, they want to know what's going on.
Totally non-time-sensitive.
Yeah, it's just seasonal 4 times a year. But my question to the colleagues is, all of this is great. The question is, who on our staffs of medium to large synagogues is going to do this, is going to be sensitive to, is going to incorporate, absorb all of this wisdom, be the expert in our shul on the subject line and making, yeah. You know, it's not going to be us.
Well, I'm hoping.
Or it's not going to be me. I'll speak for myself.
Hoping you took good notes. Hopefully you use the copy of the presentation I'll send you if I get your business card. And three, I'll do it for all of you. No, okay, I'm sorry. I wish I could.
No, but I'm talking about, I mean, I'm curious from colleagues, who on our staffs would do this?
Well, you're assuming it's somebody on the staff. Some small congregations might be a lay leader.
Right. So. Yes. Could definitely be a volunteer who's very excited about this. Yeah. Do it well.
But to follow up on that question, my question is, and this is an extremely powerful tool, and I admit it's sort of like if any computer program, I feel we use like 1% of the capability, but the organizational question of how to not only do the work, but how to organize the enterprise of communication and then following up on that and implementing it seems quite extensive.
Is your organization big enough to have a communications person?
On staff?
Yes.
It's our synagogue administrator who would have to be that person.
Right. I know, you're wearing 10 hats and it's impossible, but hopefully you have someone, whether it's a volunteer or a staff member, who has embraced this. You know, they're into software and technology, and this is a no-brainer to them, and they'll relish doing it well. Yes? Lastly, I'm sorry, I don't want to forget. Take advantage of the resources. We have live webinars every day, recorded webinars 24/7. You can call. The Learning Center is so robust, and you don't even have to be one of our users. You don't even have to be a customer to access it, and we will help you nonetheless, and we would love to. So don't be shy about that.
I'm getting this understood. When you have that click here, that should take people back to our website or to you?
I'd want them to go to your website.
Okay.
That's where good stuff happens.
Now, with it forward or share with other people, if I read the New York Times article, like they have that thing shared here or Jerusalem Post or whatever, I hate that. I have to type in somebody's email address that I don't remember. I usually just send it to myself and then I send it.
Okay.
Do you have a better way to do it?
Well, there's an advantage to using the forward to a friend feature. There's two. One is that the tracking remains intact. And two, all the formatting remains the right way. Sometimes when you forward something in HTML from Outlook or something else, it changes the formatting a bit and it will uglify your email. So I like to train and educate my recipients to use the forward to a friend button instead of just forwarding it from Outlook.
But it can't access your contacts?
It can't access your, and the reason it can't, there's actually a reason. It gets into an area where it may be violating the CAN Spam Act. Because you could have a recipient forward it to 1 million people. Right? And then you'd be responsible for violating the CAN Spam Act.
I'm sorry, this is going to sound really, I've got a very basic question.
It's okay.
So we work on Microsoft Outlook, right? And we send out emails and they look just like that awful one September 06 that you showed at the beginning.
Right.
So constant contact would be something that we would use in place of that?
Separately. Differently. You would still use Outlook for your regular email, but for these nice looking, you know, mass emails, you'd go online, log into your Constant Contact account, create your email, and send it to everybody.
Got it.
And the advantage of that, even though it says it's coming from you and from your email address, is actually coming from our servers. And bulk email today is so hard to get delivered, but we have relationships with all the ISPs. We have this huge reputation. Our stuff gets through. So I told you about how spam filters work. I said, you know, don't use, be careful with the language you use. The reality is, for a big ISP, like Gmail, Yahoo, MSN, they don't even care. They don't even look at that. Only small ones do. The big ones care way more about where it's coming from, the server it's coming from. I went to America Online last month. I made a free account. I went into Constant Contact. I sent myself an email with the subject line, free spam Viagra sale. And it went right into my inbox. Did not go into the junk folder, because America Online said, oh, this is coming from Constant Contact. They don't do spam, so it gets in.
We just had to, by the way, we got with spam and can't send stuff out anymore. And now we have to do everything through Constant Contact. It was more like 10 people.
Yeah, I mean, we do on occasion, well, if you get too many spam reports, we'll fire you. And we'll call you first and we'll walk you through it. But we don't let spammers use our systems. And if you are an accidental spammer, we'll try our best to coach you through it. Maybe that subject line special offer for you was not a great idea. But you know, we'll always work with you. All right, I know you need to go. Thank you so much for coming. Please leave your business card on that tray, that round tray right there would be perfect. And make sure you get a copy of Call Free. I have blanks for you.
Yes, Carl.
Where my blanks go?
They all got distributed.
Really? Okay, I have more. Stuff. Yeah. Buy my stuff. I know you sell stuff a ton that makes you different.
But you have this mission and this very profound content, and the limitation is distribution.
Yeah, right.
This takes that away.
But this other thing is just so intriguing. You know, there's a mindset issue in the congregation. People didn't want to like send out the newsletter. Everybody was like, "What do you mean? You should be a member." But now this is very creative.
But the things you have to say, it's universal. Am I wrong?
No, it is universal.
Two weeks ago, number one. He was interviewing the two guys who came on Twitter.
Yes.
And he saw the program.
And
so all that we were talking about.
Yeah,
so, and one number two. So with our stuff, all of a sudden, we have tons of bounce backs. Our email is now going out to our comments, right? But you just out to Apple. Okay. Especially from AOL. And apparently it's because we were just sending stuff out. And then they said that we have to send everything out to the constant content. Mm. That's what I
do. Oh, your own servers have gotten to where they're blocked to.
Yeah, yeah. And so now, even if I just have a regular email from one person, can't get through there, and why is there going to fix our IT people there?
So it's when something happened with the Arizona Realtors Association, 55,000 members using their own servers to send, they have lockless it because of bulk email. You're going to have to go in and change your IP address, your server address, to use your own servers.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do.
This is fantastic.
Thank you.
We need to change our IP address.
Yeah, change our IP address.
Don't forget your stuff.
Don't forget your server, but these are going to be a new IP address. Because that's what they're going by. I'm blocking stuff.
Okay. And that'll take care of it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad. Thanks so much. All right. I appreciate it.
We all really
I just heard by, okay, I wish there was a way to get everybody's email address so I could just at least send them this stuff.
Through you know, our